Mm-hmm.
It was a lot calmer and more peaceful than it is today. We didn't have, at least on the surface, we didn't have drug problems or crime problems. It was unheard of for anybody to come in and attack someone in school. The teachers were all dedicated. Normal, my life anyway, was mixed up in sports and studies. Although I should have done a little more of that than I did. A typical day would start out probably just like yours does now, mm-hmm. or the high school kids now. A bus ride into the school until you were about 11th or 12th grader, and if you had it, you were lucky enough to get a car. Most of us didn't have one. But anyway, we took the bus in and go to our homeroom and right on through the day. And I would rather be football or baseball as far as the men or the boys were concerned. It would happen after school. Go home and start all over. Probably didn't have as much variation in the classes. We had auto mechanics, for instance, and theater, reading, writing, arithmetic, college prep courses. Pretty normal.
Okay. So what was it? Like you played football and baseball and...
I played, up until the 10th grade, I played baseball, basketball, and football. But the basketball situation, first of all, I was 5'6½" and that didn't make for being a good basketball player. So I concentrated on football and baseball, and baseball was always my favorite sport. And as you know, I made the varsity as a junior in football and as a junior in baseball.
Did they have any grade requirements like they do now, like a 1.7, or were they?
Yes. You, on your grading period, you had to have, I believe it was a 2-point, but I'm not real sure of that. I can tell you this, though, that if you had an incomplete in any class, you had to complete that or you were not eligible to play. Because it happened to me, I was sick and I didn't know that I had an incomplete, but I,
fixed it. Okay. Do you think the coaches and practices, like how much they have today, do you think that's tougher on the kids today, or do you think it was about the same as when you went to school? Is there more?
The baseball, I can speak to the football and the baseball. The football in those days started in the middle of August. We had 2-a-day practices before the regular season started, and it didn't matter how hot it was. And in the 50s and 60s, you did not get water during practice. You toughed it out until practice was over. You had to, when school started, you practiced every night, except game night. They took you out, you had a meal.
Advertised
or publicized, I'll put it that way. We, for for instance, when I graduated from high school, I had gotten an offer to play baseball at Western Michigan, but it was like $250, and I was out of work. I didn't have any job. I got laid off in my senior year, and there was just no way that I knew about it. Nobody told me about other scholarships available.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, they're, they deluge you with the scholarships, at least the opportunities to maintain or get.
So you worked all through high school too?
I worked on and off. I had I worked at a grocery store as a stock boy and a carryout boy. I helped, my brother had a big paper out. I helped him with that. Then my senior year, I went to work at a paper company, the River Raisin Paper Company, and I worked midnight there all that summer. And just before I thought I'd have enough money, I found out that I was going to get laid off because the whole town, well, the whole state and the nation in 1954, 55, 56 was in a recession. Mm-hmm. So, but I worked as much as I could. And my home situation was, you know, not like Dustin's.
Yeah.
It was a lot different. My mother was working in a factory. My father was working as an independent millwright. He worked on and off for my stepfather. So we had to help out, both of us. We had to buy our own clothes. And so, but it was fine.
Yeah. Was that normal for most high school age students to work? Did all of them have jobs? Or?
No, I don't think so.
No,
general. A goodly number of them did, but I do not believe that most, not like they do now. Mm-hmm. Now these kids work summers, they go to work for fast food places, and they need the money.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than it was. We didn't need money in the 50s.
Yeah. So after high school, you joined the service. What made you decide to go to the service? Was it money or?
No. Well, about seven of us were on one of my friend's front porches talking, and it was sometime in August. I had just been laid off. I knew I wasn't going to be able to go to college. None of these individuals ever did go to college. So we just contemplated what we were going to do, and I suggested that we go join the Army. And so the next morning, seven of us met at the courthouse, or the post office, excuse me, in those days it was the post office. We volunteered for the draft, and in October of 1955, we were all inducted into the Army. And
wow.
That was it.
What was it like? Did you go to different states for boot camp?
I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana, or Fort Wayne, Michigan, which is where they used to put everybody in. You go through a physical and stuff, and then we got on a bus and we went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, for the first 2 weeks, and they outfitted us and that type of stuff. And then we got to Fort Carson, Colorado. And we had our basic training. All of us had our basic training. That was one of the things that we insisted that kept us together.
Yeah.
So we stayed together through basic training. We came home for Christmas. And after that, five of the group went to Korea. And Daryl Hurst, who was one of my best friends, went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, as a paratrooper, and I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and for advanced training in Morse code, radio operator, that type of thing. Then I went to Germany for 18 months.
What did you do when you were in Germany?
Excuse me. I was in an Italian headquarters that was stationed in Regensburg, and we were on really border patrol type thing with Czechoslovakia and Hungary and that area. And I was the courts and boards clerk, which was similar to a court recorder here. Then I became the battalion major, the battalion commander's clerk. That's one clerk. I really didn't have to fight a war. I didn't have to shoot anybody.
Yeah.
The only exciting thing was the Hungarian revolt in 1954. We were right on that border. It was thousands of people came out of Hungary, and they got into Czechoslovakia, then they got down into Austria, in Vienna, Austria. That we were only about 90 miles from Vienna, so we spent about a month and a half out in the field with a tank, and it was kind of exciting when you're 18 years old. That's a lot of fun, you know. You don't realize the consequences. But other than that, nothing spectacular happened. And our company, which was Custer's 7th Regiment, the 7th Armored Cavalry Regiment, we all came back to Fort Knox, and I played baseball at Fort Knox for the last 6 months I was in the service.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you next about baseball. So you had to do the pro baseball?
I tried out for the St. Louis Cardinals. Mm-hmm. They had a tryout camp, but it was nothing like what my son has gone to, you know,
yeah.
Notre Dame and that type of thing. And we all got to perform our specialties, whatever that might be. I got to pitch two innings, and I thought I did very well. The scout, who was a ex-major league pitcher, name was Ewell Blackwell, and it's amazing that I can remember this because it's so long ago.
Yeah.
But I can remember him telling me, you know, how old are you, kid? Now, I tried out for this baseball before I went to service, and I told him I was 18, and he said, I'll tell you something, you're fast enough, and you may be good enough, but you're not big enough. Mm. Come back when you grow up. Well, obviously I didn't grow too much more, and I decided that maybe my career would be better suited if I found a different line of work.
Okay. So you're glad you went to the Army instead of college, or gained a lot from
I gained, obviously I would have gained a lot at college too.
Yeah.
But the 2 years, in 2 years' time, I went from being a high school kid to an individual that was able to take care of himself, that knew he had to earn a living the rest mm-hmm. of his life. I was proud. Right now, I'm just as proud of having been in the service as I was when I went in. Mm-hmm. It's something that while it not necessarily for everybody, it was for me. And when I got back, a lot of my friends had gone into college, and they had completed 2 years, and I saw them at parties, that type of thing. And there was a big difference. I had, you know, I couldn't understand why they were talking about the football game that they were going to go see in the dorm party or the whatever. That just was way out of my range at that time. I wasn't interested in it anymore. I think the Army was a good experience. I wished I would have gone to college. I'm going to make sure that if my kids want to go to college, they have the opportunity. But you know, I've already sent three daughters through college, and I've got my son Dustin and Bridget, who I hope intend to go to college. And I hope they don't have to go to the service.
Yeah. Did many people go to college back then? Was it real popular to go to college, or was it just not really?
It wasn't as... You could still get a job. A high school graduate could still get a good job.
A good job.
But it was starting to bend that way. And really, it was the doctor's sons and the lawyer's sons and the business owner's sons that were, or, and daughters going to that were going to college. But now...
Wealthy people.
That's
went
right.
To college.
Now, everybody, if you want to get a good job, you have to have a college degree, or you have to have specialized training in something.
Yep.
The automotive companies, even the people that are on the assembly line, they're working robots and computers. The headquarters people, those that I deal with at Chrysler and General Motors, for instance, they don't even... If they've been there for a while, they have their bachelor's and they're working on their master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that's coming in now, they recruit from Michigan State, Michigan, all over, and they won't even recruit you unless you have a master's degree. That's what they want, or working for one. So,
how did you end up getting involved in the trucking business? Would you? Family involved in it, or?
From the time, the first sound I can remember, this is the absolute truth, is the starting of a diesel engine. And it was, I was born at home in an apartment above Duffy Garage, which is
the one
Duffy
over on
Towing.
Telegraph?
Duffy Towing,
oh.
Telegraph.
Same one.
And, my dad and my uncles, they all worked for Duffy Trucking. Joe Duffy, my great uncle. Then, so that's how I got involved in it. Then my uncles all were drivers. When I was 8, 9, 10 years old, they'd ask me if I'd like to go along with them sometimes. I'd have to hide underneath the dash of the truck and away we'd go. So after that, when I got out of the service, because I had had telegraphy and I knew we were on International Morse Code, the railroad, the New York Central and Michigan Central Division of the New York Central, was hiring, and they needed a telegrapher. And I just happened to, 2 days after I got out of the service, I made a phone call. I was working within 4 days from the time I got discharged. I worked for the New York Central for as a ticket. I sold tickets. I ran their towers, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
I lowered and raised the bridges over the Rouge River that were so the ships could come in.
Yeah.
It was really, and it was a stressful job. I worked 7 days a week. I went all over the state, any place that the Michigan Central Division was. And all the time, though, I kept thinking, this is not what I really want.
Yeah.
So I made a trip to the bowling alley, and Bob Duffy was in there, who happened to be the president of Jones Transfer at that
okay.
time. And I told him I wanted to know if there's any job openings. He said, all we have is a clerk's job in Toledo, Ohio. If you want it, you can have it. I took $1 an hour cut to take it, which was a lot of money then, because
yeah.
I made $2.40 on the railroad.
$2.40 an hour?
$2.40 an hour in 1957. And in 1959, I went to work in April for Jones Transfer at $1.40 an hour.
Wow. That is a big cut.
But I liked it. I really did. And I worked my way from that clerk's job to a dispatcher's job in an afternoon terminal management. manager's job in Toledo. I don't know if this is boring you on this part of it all.
No, it's not.
Okay. But anyway, I went to Pontiac. We had a very small facility up there, and I became the terminal manager, and then I became the regional sales manager. And then pretty soon we were Pontiac. We opened two more terminals, but I had all the sales territory. I got a little bored after a while because the people ahead of me in the corporation at that time were all, they weren't very old.
No.
And they all happened to be relatives or of the owners. So I left and I went to Toronto, and I ran a trucking company up there called McKinley Transport for 2 years as the executive vice president. And the Jones people asked me to come back, and which I always wanted to. But anyway, my goal was to be the president of the company. And I came back to Monroe, and I worked my way from vice president to executive vice president to the president of one of the companies called Customer First, and to the office of the president for Trans Jones. So I realized my goal.
How much
I'm still working.
How much were you making by then? From the 140 to the...
140 an hour by then, which was, let's see, that was 19, from 1960. 59, I was making $1.40.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, I was up to $30,000. And there's a lot of other things in that too, you know.
Yeah.
Insurance, etc., which I didn't have originally. And then I eventually ended up, when I became executive vice president, I was $90,000 plus bonus.
Wow, you worked way up there. So, do you remember about the desegregation of the school?
Yes, I do. The busing issues?
Yes.
I remember the confrontation in Little Rock High School with the governor standing there, and I knew that. I can remember. Trying to think. I think the governor's name was Orville Favreau or something like that. Favreau. It's close, but it's not the right name. Anyway, the Kennedys had to send in the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was about 1960, 61 in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And they escorted these kids, the black kids in that Little Rock High School. Must have been 9 or 10, maybe more, I'm not sure, but they took those kids, the National Guard took those kids in and took them out of school, and it was a big to-do down there. Up here, of course, having been in the Army and having gone to school in a segregated school, I mean in a non-segregated school, Monroe High School, I never thought those things existed.
Yeah.
But, there was a lot of talk in Detroit, because Detroit was about 65% black, and the other 35% was probably a mix of white and Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was changing, and the kids, both black and white, that had to be bused from one black area to a white area and the white kids to the black area, it didn't make much sense.
Yeah.
Not to us, because it was, I mean, all it was extra cost. But it was a hectic time. A lot of animosity in this country because of that issue.
So you worked with a lot of different cultures and different minority groups.
Right now, right now I'm working for a minority company. Joe, excuse me.
You're recording.
Majority owner was a black man. His name was Gary White. And it was I think, more hectic and trying for him than it was for me. Because I didn't care. But he did. If there was any prejudice involved in that issue, it was on his side, not on my side. And I don't know about the rest of the people. But right now, I'm very happy with what I'm doing with. And it's amazing. But when you really sit down and you work with someone, you get to know them. Mm-hmm. There's really no difference in none whatsoever. And people that think there is, that there's one or the other that thinks they're superior, it's false and misleading.
Do you remember what kind of music you were into in high school, or what?
Oh yeah,
TV was real big then, right?
Yeah, the TV was the TV. We didn't have one until 1950-51, but. The music that I was into, that everybody was into, was pre-Beatles and Elvis. It was the big bands, and then it was the, I think they call it doo-wop, like the Four Aces and the Four Lads, and to this day, I still like that music. I really never did get into Elvis, and although I wasn't dumb enough to think that Pat Boone was as good as Elvis, because he wasn't. But he represented the other culture, right?
Yeah.
But I've always liked things like the Glenn Miller Orchestra. In fact, we had a dinner dance at the Pontiac Traffic Club, and I happened to be the president of the club, and we had always had just some little dinky band, and it was a dinner dance. We'd get 300 people in it. You know, it was a president's ball is what it was called. All of them, the customers and the big wheels and transportation. So I decided that I was going to do something different. I changed the location, and I booked the Glenn Miller Orchestra with Buddy DeFranco, because Glenn Miller had been dead for a long time. But we had a major turnout for it, and it was it was a big evening for us.
Yeah.
And I thought I did the right thing in this one, though. Wow.
Did you have a lot of dances in school?
Yes.
Proms?
We had all the proms, and we had this. I'm sure they may still have them, but they had a Sadie Hawkins dance, and but outsiders, I mean, everybody went to it. I think outsiders. Everybody went to that dance that could.
Yeah.
They, you know, and the girls all dressed up. The guys, we had to wear a suit and things like that. But we really didn't. They had maybe one, maybe two chaperones. There was no problems. It was nice. It was a different time. We had a lot of less worries. And I still have, I was on the Lotus Leaf.
Oh, we still have that too.
I was sports editor on it. And I was on the yearbook. Those were great times.
Yeah.
And I still have them.
Do you?
Downstairs in the basement somewhere. I had a issue of every Lotus Leaf.
Wow.
For 1954 and 1955. So I have them somewhere here. I'd have to find them.
Maybe I could take a couple for my turn in with this.
Sure, if you'd like, you could.
Show them. All right. One more question. Do you remember about Kennedy's assassination, where you were, how shocking it was?
Yes, I remember about both Kennedys. John Kennedy, I was in... I don't remember the date, but it was November of 1963, I believe. Dallas, of course. In fact, I even went out to see the building where they that Oswald supposedly shot him. I don't believe that theory, but I was walking out the door of a Pontiac terminal that I had, which, by the way, was the last place Jimmy Hoffa was alive talking to someone before he was assassinated. That building, because we were leasing it out, and the Teamsters were over there. But anyway, I couldn't believe it. And of course, they didn't tell us immediately that he was dead. The president's been shot. And then they came on, and Walter Cronkite, I can remember him on television, we watched there. And the pictures, of course, of Jackie trying to climb out of the car, and the Secret Service guy. And I've read as much as I could about it since then. And there are a lot of theories. I don't think Warren Commission did their job at all. There was too much cover up in there. And there should have been some government agencies that were investigated, like the FBI or the CIA, one of the two. Then Bobby Kennedy was in Los Angeles, and he had just given a speech. And I'm thinking, let's get on to somewhere. Maybe he wasn't in Los Angeles. I'm not sure, but he was. He gave the speech and says, "Let's get on and go. We got to go here, and here."
Place.
And he walked through the back of the thing, and I can remember seeing the pictures of Rosie Grier, who was a football player, grabbing Sirhan's hand and grabbed the gun, and I think he broke the guy's armor, thing that held him down. There was no doubt that Bobby Kennedy, even though he was still breathing, was dead. He shot him right in the head. And that was, I can remember laying in bed. This is emotional. I was asleep, and I had the television on, which I always do, and I can hear this guy talking, and I woke up.